Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, May 4th, 2023. 3D printed homes slated for new El Cosmico grounds open for reservation. By Allegra Hobbs. Allegra at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. El Cosmico announced last week that the reservation wait list for its selection of 3D printed houses, planned for the outer edge of the hotel's upcoming Antelope Hills property, is now open, with homes available for purchase starting at $900,000. The Sunday Homes, designed and constructed in partnership with the architecture firm Big Bjarke Ingels Group and 3D printing startup Icon, are made up of connected circular modules, creating, quote, a unique cloud-like floor plan from the sum of the combined circles, end quote, per the reservation's website. The available homes will consist of three floor plans, two, three, and four bedrooms, ranging in size from 1,500 to 2,400 square feet. A total of 3,240 homes will be constructed on the site, said El Cosmico founder Liz Lambert. Though the homes start in price at a baseline of $900,000, Lambert said the full spectrum of prices had not yet been determined. We're still determining what the price range will be, but prices will be based on the number of bedrooms, their location, and any upgrades people may want to select, said Lambert. As we move forward with the project, we'll share more information about pricing. The homes are just one component of a larger plan to relocate the El Cosmico Hotel and campground to a sprawling 61 acres off Antelope Hills Road, tripling the size of the grounds and roughly doubling its guest capacity. The new resort will include around 120 units for hotel guests, a restaurant, an infinity pool, and a bathhouse, amenities that would be available for local use. The new site will also serve as the location for El Cosmico's annual Trans-Pecos Festival of Music Plus Love. Since the ambitious project's announcement in early March, reactions among Antelope Hills property owners has been mixed. While some have expressed enthusiasm or ambivalence, others have expressed apprehension over the development's potential impacts on their quality of life, with impacts to the water supply, noise, and traffic chief among their concerns. A newly formed neighborhood group plans to bring their concerns to Lambert and maintain a dialogue with the hotelier as the project moves forward. As for the homes slated to line the property's outskirts, Lambert has said that the idea is, in part, for those homes to become part of the rental pool, providing alternatives to Airbnbs and relieving some of the demand for short-term rental properties in town. The homes will be managed by El Cosmico. Still, it is too early to say how many of the homes will become part of the El Cosmico rental pool and how many may potentially be full-time residences, said Lambert. The question of whether interested buyers plan to use the home as a primary residence is among those asked of applicants in a brief questionnaire. Other questions include whether the applicant has ever been to Marfa and whether the applicant is a broker or working with a broker. Lambert clarified that those questions will not be used to make determinations about one's position on the wait list, but rather to customize the process of matching applicants to homes. Responses to the questionnaire won't determine who can purchase a Sunday home, said Lambert. They will mostly be used to match the specific characteristics of each home with their future owners. El Cosmico and partners plan to break ground on the project in early 2024. Photo courtesy of Chinati Education. Marfa High School student artists walk through Store Horns, a collaborative exhibition and art sale held at the Marfa Book Company last week. Workforce Solutions Borderplex initiates development of 10 home daycares in Presidio County. By Mary Cantrell. MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio County. In response to the continual lack of regional child care options, Workforce Solutions Borderplex, a nonprofit organization, is launching an initiative to jumpstart 10 new home-based daycares in Presidio County. Maricela Correa, Director of Family Services with WSB, said the local need for more home-based daycares is apparent when considering there are no child care facilities in Marfa, and the one daycare currently operating in Presidio has very limited capacity. We are looking at how we can develop that area and be that support system because we know there's a need, and then there's also lack of infrastructure to create a child care center, said Correa. WSB received funding in the form of a community benefit grant from CEI Capital Management LLC, which it will use to hire an outreach specialist to help recruit home daycare providers, as well as provide startup costs and assistance to those new businesses. Correa said in addition to addressing the need for child care, the project's goal is also to bolster the local workforce by providing jobs in the form of home daycare operators and more. This would also help our businesses in the community because in order to retain or obtain employees, they themselves are looking at, well, I need child care, said Correa. For those already taking care of 1 to 2 children of their relatives or friends, Correa said setting up a home daycare can be a way to formalize, scale up, and profit off of services that in some cases are already being provided. WSB will work with the Rio Grande Council of Governments to hire a local outreach specialist to help individuals explore what it would take to get their homes established as licensed daycare facilities. The outreach specialist, a short-term role hopefully performed by a local, said Correa, will also connect potential home daycare providers to resources, such as consultations, where they can learn about requirements, funding opportunities, and more. Monetary support for these new businesses may include covering fees relating to licensing, rezoning, gas inspections, and background checks, which will be required for anyone that lives in the home that will serve as a daycare. Recruits will also be made aware of WSB's facilities in Presidio and Alpine, which offer resume writing and other job services. Though neighboring Brewster County has a growing number of child care options, a couple of existing home daycares and a Montessori school in Alpine, plus Alpine ISD's new initiative to create a daycare with the school, to the tune of $500,000 in funding from WSB and the Texas Workforce Commission, Presidio County remains in dire need of the services, said Correa, and home daycares seem to be a viable option. We thought, well, maybe if we get some registered homes, they're smaller, with a smaller amount of children that they accept, but they might be spread out throughout the county and might be able to support that need, said Correa. The program is loosely set up in two phases, explained Correa. Phase one will focus on locating potential home daycare operators, ideally by the end of September 2023, while phase two will involve education on child care regulations and getting locations up and running with necessary licensing and fees. I know we say 10, but if we're successful with one or two, then hopefully more come on board, she added. Once home daycares are set up, she said, WSB can support them further financially with supplies, materials, and equipment. Daycares that enter into contracts with WSB may also receive subsidies provided by the nonprofit, money provided to parents to offset the daily fee of child care. Rates differ for infants, toddlers, and preschoolers, ranging from $22 to $24, and are higher for daycares that participate in Texas Rising Star, a quality rating improvement program, ranging from $26 to $30 per day. There are a number of technical and legal distinctions among home daycares, which potential operators will have to familiarize themselves with. For example, registered and licensed homes are not one and the same. Both are limited to 12 children under the age of 14, but registered homes can only host 6 children, then an additional 6 for after-school programs. Licensed homes, meanwhile, can host 12 at any one time. And infants count as 2 children due to the level of care required. Home daycares are also subject to routine health and safety inspections, which are made available to the public. Still, despite the legal and technical hoops, Correa argued it was a feasible way to make a living and an opportunity to become an entrepreneur with relatively low overhead costs, given the cost-effectiveness of running a business out of one's home. And one thing was guaranteed, said Correa, a customer base. It is a business no matter how you look at it, said Correa. It's not a new thing. It's not a fad that comes and goes. There's always a need as parents in the community have children. Presidio parent Diana Aguirre Arruendarez, who has a 4-year-old and a 3-month-old, affirmed that more daycare services are needed in the border town. Arruendarez is the main caregiver for her children, having been unsuccessful in getting them into the Presidio Coalition for Children Daycare in Presidio, which is located on the school district's grounds. The facility, which opened in 2018, can accommodate up to 150 students, but currently only serves 12 due to staffing shortages. The facility is working to improve operations after pandemic closures, but still has a long wait list, which frustrates parents like Armendaris, who said she doesn't understand why childcare in the area is so limited. Why wasn't the opening of a daycare in Presidio databased, getting an average of the demand and, in this way, meeting the needs of the population, said Armendaris. Since it's a rural area with not many residents, it could have been better thought out. Armendaris said if a legitimate, certified home daycare provider or providers in Presidio existed, she would consider sending her children there. That, in turn, would help her go back to work. Marfa parent Yasmin Guevara, whose 6-year-old son attends Marfa Elementary, said she, too, would consider a home daycare if it was properly credentialed. The Marfa ISD School Board's decision to switch to a 4-day instructional week for the 2023-2024 school year, with students having Fridays off, is concerning for Guevara. While she supports the initiative enacted by the school board to give teachers more time to prepare for instruction, prevent burnout, and attract more hires to the district, her limited child care options are troublesome. Her main method of child care is relying on family members, she said. But her grandmother, the only caretaker available on Fridays, often has other out-of-town family obligations and doctor's appointments, meaning Guevara could be left with no one to turn to. This is a concern for me, because if she is not able to watch my son, that would mean that I would have to take the day off of work to care for him, since there are no other child care resources in town, said Guevara. As a single parent who works full-time and is also enrolled in courses at Sol Ross State University, the lack of local child care has been stressful for her and her family, she said. Guevara advocated for affordable child care for families of all sizes and for more general spaces for children to go in town, similar to a Boys and Girls Club. Not only because the school is switching to a four-day work week, but for the children to have a place during the summer to spend their time while parents are working, said Guevara. Correa said discussions with local school districts like Marfa and Fort Davis ISDs regarding the establishment of school district-supported daycare facilities were still ongoing. Alpine ISD's new daycare initiative, which would include daycare over the summer months, has also made progress as of late, said Correa, having hired a daycare director, assistant director, and more. I think a lot of the school districts around the area are looking to see what Alpine is doing and how that is working out, said Correa. As for the possibility of 10 new home daycares in Presidio County, Correa said taking care of young children and being a part of their growth was a rewarding experience, and they were hopeful they would attract interested parties. They are teachers of early education, said Correa. The little ones that are developing and are going to be heading to school to have an opportunity to be able to be part of that child's development. Request for revised solitaire deeds highlights issues at Industrial Park. By Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio. At a meeting on April 20th, H. Cowan, a contractor for Solitaire Homes, approached the Presidio Municipal Development District, PMDD, board about obtaining revised deeds to the company's land in Presidio Industrial Park. A recent survey of Solitaire's land in the Industrial Park revealed that the land's original survey had been inaccurate, bolstering the allegations of now-resigned PMDD leaders that deeds attached to the land contained long-festering errors that needed correcting. Now, Cowan was requesting a revised, accurate deed, one which also reflected the park's current ownership. Paperwork still lists a defunct organization that hasn't existed since 2013. Controversy over the state of the Presidio Industrial Park led to the resignation of two former board leaders months prior. Former executive director and board president Jaron Stevens and Terry Bishop wrote a searing letter about corruption within the city of Presidio, including, quote, potentially illegal real estate transactions, end quote, and, quote, incorrect titles and deeds, end quote, in the industrial park dating back to 2012. Despite the shakeup in board leadership that now leaves PMDD without an executive director, Cowan was instructed by Presidio City Council to make his case before the development district. At press time, Cowan hadn't received the revised deeds he requested. Nancy Aravalo, a longtime PMDD member who was appointed the new board president at April's meeting, confirmed that it appears the property was given to Solitaire, in line with Stevens' understanding of the matter. Arvalo said she had reached out to the original surveyor of the property, but hadn't yet heard back. Despite the widespread confusion about the history of Solitaire's chunk of the industrial park, she was hoping everything would be settled promptly. "I have no problem signing the new warranty deed for Mr. Cowan," she wrote in an email to the Presidio International. "But the board wants to do their own homework first." Presidio Industrial Park, History and Current Controversies. The industrial park is a 140-acre patch of partially developed land just west of Presidio on Farm Road 170. The land was purchased by the PMDD's predecessor organization, the Development Corporation of Presidio, DCOP, in 1999 with the goal of attracting businesses. The complex is currently home to Solitaire Homes and the Presidio International Drag Strip. DCOP was folded over into PMDD by the state legislature in 2013 after the city failed to fund the organization for the second year in a row. By reincorporating as a development district instead of a development organization, PMDD leadership would receive their tax funds directly from the state instead of waiting for the city to apportion their fair share. The industrial park is still legally owned by DCOP, despite having been defunct since 2013. Former PMDD Executive Director Jaron Stevens had long had concerns about the legal and financial history of the land. "There's a few clerical errors, if you will, on the surveys," she told her board at a meeting in February of 2022. Stevens also worried that if the issues of industrial park ownership and land transfer weren't settled, the city could lose the land. "These issues are serious, and there is a possibility that the entire industrial park ownership will soon revert to the state of Texas," she wrote in her resignation letter. About a year later, Stevens' fears over surveys, at least, were proven right. Solitaire Homes was recently purchased by Cavco Industries, which requested a survey of their new slice of the industrial park. Their survey revealed a discrepancy of about an acre from the original survey, requiring rewritten deeds detailing the transfer of the land to Solitaire's parent company, Elliott Manufactured Homes. Stevens had hoped to one day turn the industrial park into a foreign trade zone, FTZ, to bolster Presidio's growing international trade. An FTZ helps manufacturers selling goods between countries to skirt import taxes. Within FTZs, company goods can be unloaded, manufactured, reassembled, tested, sampled, processed, repackaged, and re-exported without the intervention of U.S. Customs authorities, explains a pamphlet from the Office of the Governor's Economic Development and Tourism Initiative. Ringing in at 34, Texas has the most FTZs of any state. Along the U.S.-Mexico border, El Paso, Eagle Pass, Laredo, Starr County, McAllen, Weslaco, and Brownsville boast their own. Presidio is a rare exception. County Judge Joe Portillo has recently taken up the FTZ mantle with an initiative to create a self-governing port authority in Presidio that would help fund its creation. "I want to leave some money for the Port Authority to look at new projects," he explained at a commissioner's court meeting on March 8th. "Those goals are still far off. For now, city officials are only beginning to untangle the land's past." Solitaire's history with the park. Solitaire was the first company to lease the land and served as a test case for how to draw even more companies to set up shop in Presidio. Cowan, who brought Solitaire to Presidio after scouting the border for a favorable place to set up shop, signed a lease with the city in 2009. Their 17-acre chunk of the industrial park was, at that time, undeveloped. Solitaire's Presidio operation is an example of the maquiladora, or twin plant, concept. The company's main plant is in Ojinaga, on a plot of land acquired before they set up shop in Presidio. The land in the Presidio Industrial Park is a staging area for materials and finished homes that haven't yet reached their destinations. DCOP and Solitaire set up an unconventional leasing agreement. For the first 2 years, Solitaire would pay $1 while the tenant developed the premises into a support site serving the tenant's Ojinaga Chihuahua factory. When the clock struck year 3 of the leasing agreement, DCOP could charge a monthly rent of $5,000 if Solitaire was unable to provide stable employment to area residents. The lease stipulates that Solitaire would be able to lease the land for free if they were able to provide 10 full-time jobs to employees in their Presidio office and 150 full-time jobs to employees at their Ojinaga factory. Cowan said that Stevens had long accused him of getting land for free in a series of potentially illegal real estate transactions that directly benefited previous board members, as she spelled out in her resignation letter. He insists that it was simply a mutually beneficial business transaction. The bargaining chip was land, he told the Presidio International. Between years 2 and 8 of the leasing agreement, Solitaire could purchase the land outright for a price that would depreciate every year until the value reached $25,000. After year 8 of fulfilling their agreement, Solitaire could purchase the land for $1. Cowan said that those stipulations were a bargain struck between his company and PMDD to protect the company's investment in the land. We spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on improving the land and $1 million or so on buildings, he said. We said, well, let's mitigate our risk of losing everything should that happen along the way. Stevens was also concerned that Cowan's leadership on the PMDD board compromised the ethics of the land deal. He joined just after PMDD was formed by the state legislature and resigned just after the deeds were formally transferred to Solitaire. Cowan said that his resignation from the board had nothing to do with the land deal and instead with another festering issue in Presidio politics, the establishment of a transmigrante route through town. The deeds were signed at the end of November 2018. Through 2019 and 2020, the city was consumed by controversy over the possible arrival of transmigrantes, merchants towing used cars, appliances, and other goods through Mexico to Central America. As cartel violence raised safety concerns at Los Indios, formerly the only port authorized for transmigrante traffic, rumors swirled that Mexican officials would be rerouting the program through Ojinaga. The Mexican government officially announced the switch in January 2021. Throughout the discussion, city officials pitched PMDD land in the industrial park as a potential staging area for the transmigrantes. Cowan, anticipating the present-day sprawling lots marked by man camps and food trucks, was concerned about how transmigrante traffic could clog up the highway he needed to run his business. Cowan routinely attended city meetings to lambast the idea of designating the lots within the industrial park and ultimately resigned his post in protest. I resigned from the board because I felt a coming conflict of interest, he said. Recently, while awaiting the revised deed, Cowan said he felt that ultimately, despite ongoing investigation into his business transactions with the city of Presidio, Solitaire was there to stay. No one else has ever done anything out there to create employment except for us, he said.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, May 4th, 2023. FSISD says no to outdoor court by Sean Yorks. The idea of a covered outdoor basketball court at Fort Stockton Middle School is an intriguing one for some of the district. The item had been discussed at the March school board meeting, and board member Andy Rivera asked for the item to be put on the April 26th board meeting agenda to consider putting out a request for proposals to construct the court. The court would be just like the one the city of Fort Stockton constructed at Gene Cummings Park, which has grown in popularity as the weather has warmed. But the board said no, and the motion to send requests for proposals failed by a 4-3 vote. Superintendent Zamora said he reached out to city officials on the costs, which amounted to around $250,000. I know there was some interest in taking something over to that side of town, specifically because one of the neat things our middle school is doing is they're proposing a 4.5-day schedule for Fridays, and so the kids can have something to do, someplace to practice on that side of town. I think there's pros and cons for doing something like this. The tough decision is always doing. Once something is built and done, everybody's happy because it's there forever. Board member Ursula Sanchez said it's a great idea, but I think we should use that money elsewhere. Board member Anastasio Dominguez agreed with Sanchez, saying he went to Gene Cummings Park after a school one day, and it was packed with kids playing basketball, and there was plenty of room. I just feel that what the city's got out there for us right now is enough. Our money belongs in the school, and I know this money's not going to come from the bond. It would have to come from our reserves, but I feel that money can be used elsewhere. Rivera said he believes a court at the middle school is needed. It'll be great for the community. I think once we build it, everybody will love it. Adding that the elderly who live at the Focused Care Nursing Home adjacent to the middle school would probably enjoy watching the kids play. I think it will be good for everybody. Board member Freddie Martinez also thinks it's a good idea, but at the same time it's a good spot, but we're planning on doing something at the high school and incorporate it with that somewhere out in that area. It's not something that needs to be decided right now, said Billy Espino. It's for discussion. It's still something that needs to be considered. Rivera made a motion to proceed with requests for proposals, and Florentino Garcia seconded the motion, but the motion failed 4-3. Dr. Medina follows in Dr. Googler's first steps to join PCMH. The supply of physicians is far less than the demand in many parts of Texas and across the country. In rural areas of the state, that shortage is magnified on a large scale. Pecos County Hospital falls into the category of medical facilities that have challenges with recruitment and retainment due to its location. Texas Tech University Health Science Center School of Medicine is helping bridge that gap with communities such as Fort Stockton through their rural program track. What Tech does is when physicians are getting ready to come into residency, we interview with them. Tech sets up the interview with them, and depending on the class size, there may be 15 to 20 residents, and we do interviews with them. Then there's a rating system. They rate us, and we rate them, and then the matches come up, and which resident will be coming to us next time around. There's a handful of area hospitals, and if physicians are interested, they compare them with a rural facility. As you know, we need rural physicians, said Betty Briscoe, Chief CEO. Dr. Pamela Googler, who helped serve Pecos County Memorial Hospital, was the first graduate of Tech's Rural Health Program track in 2012. And is now the director of the residency program in Fort Stockton. PCMH will soon have another graduate of the program joining their staff, as Dr. Christian Medina is set to finish his residency at Pecos County Hospital in July. Medina will join PCMH as a full-time family practice doctor who also performs obstetrics, colonoscopies, and endoscopies. The Laredo, Texas native said rural medicine has long been a passion of his, and Fort Stockton was a perfect match for him and his family. I was really interested in rural medicine and giving back to the communities. I know here in Texas there are a lot of rural communities and a lot of need in these areas. So when I read about and interviewed at Tech, it drew me to the rural program they had available. Fort Stockton in particular interested me because there were a lot of opportunities to do obstetrics, lots of opportunities to learn colonoscopies, endoscopies, and then I got to serve a really neat population base. Medina added that he plans to be here for the long haul after enjoying his time in the city during his 2 years of residency. That's really what drew me towards it, and as I did my second year here, my wife and I both saw enough of the community and were happy and have a growing family. We thought there's no need to leave. Let's just stay. Medina received his bachelor degree from A&M International University in Laredo and graduated with a degree in biology with concentrations in molecular genetics and a certificate in internal national leadership. Medina said, then enrolled at American University of the Caribbean School of Medicine for 2 years and had clinical experiences in the UK, Miami, Ohio, Connecticut, and Chicago to conclude medical school before joining the Texas Tech residency program. District approves calendar. Efficiency is the name of the game at the Fort Stockton Independent School District. And the school board on April 26th approved the campus calendars for 2023 and 24 school year to include a 4.5-day school week for middle and high school students. The idea is to allow school staff more conference, tutoring, and training time. This is the second year now that we are doing something pretty neat, said Superintendent Zamora. Last year, we established our district calendar, and we gave our campuses the opportunity to go through and develop what is the best fit for their campus and this challenges, their challenges and their needs. We think it was a success. The secondary schools in the district will have a 4.5-day week. I think it's going to be a neat thing while still continuing our normal 5-day week for the elementaries. These calendars were put together by the campus leadership teams specifically for what's best for them. Transportation will not be altered whether students have an early release or an optional day. Middle school principal Sammy Solis said it will help the teachers plan. Our teachers are going to be able to plan that Friday that they're off. So half of our teachers are going to plan for the following week. The other half will do tutorials and get some remedials that students need. Currently, students who need tutoring are asked to go to school on Saturday, but it's difficult to get students to go to school on Saturday. We've been inviting about 200 kids for Saturday school, and we're lucky if we get 100. Now, later in the year, it's getting lower. We said that with the half day every Friday, the kids are already at school so they can stay and get the tutoring they need. But those who don't need extra tutoring, buses will run at normal times, so the students will need to make other arrangements to get home on Friday. And for those who have no other transportation options, the school will offer some enrichment programs. Teachers will remain on campus all day. Fort Stockton High School Principal Kenneth Wallace said the high school will have a similar situation as the middle school. It will be easier on the teachers, who normally must stay on campus well past the 4:30 p.m. quitting time for meetings. We're at a better advantage than the middle school because once that bell rings, most of our kids drive away. He added that the teachers stay on campus for those who need extra tutoring. It also is advantageous for students in athletics. We get so interrupted all year long in high school with extracurricular on Fridays. During the football season, we'll lose 6, 7, 8 instructors. So we end up taking afternoon classes, combine them together, sitting in the commons. There's no instruction going on anyway, yet the kid is stuck being there because they're waiting for the 4:30 bell to ring and dismiss them. This would alleviate all that. It wouldn't be a loss of a learning opportunity. Teachers could be better prepared knowing that they're not going to have that afternoon. Students will go to every class every day, but Friday class times will be shorter.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, April 27th. Slow start, few voters turn up on first 2 days of early voting. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Voting kicked off in the Monahans special election on Monday, where only a handful of people made their way to the council chambers inside City Hall to cast their vote. The turnout was tepid, likely due to it being a municipal election with no contested races. As of Tuesday at 6 p.m., only 32 votes had been cast. Early voting will continue throughout Friday, May 2nd, leading up to the election on Saturday, May 6th. Early ballots can still be placed at City Hall, located at 112 West 2nd Street, and voting hours are from 8 a.m. until 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. Voting hours on Election Day are 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., also in the council chambers at City Hall. The special election will ask voters to answer for or against the question to legalize the legal sale of all alcoholic beverages, including mixed beverages, and to answer for or against 7 amendments to the city charter. City Manager Rex Thee explained, "The city has been working on updating older language in the city charter, which is now outdated and no longer applies. Sample ballots may be obtained for review at City Hall." Football turf replaced for $300,000, summer school set. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. A one-time unusual financial expenditure was included in the report given by business manager Katie Jones. Jones told the Monahans Wicket Pyote School Board, "I want the board's attention called to a check written on March 23rd to Hellas Construction in the amount of $311,568 for turf at the football field. This is an expense above the regular monthly bills." Every 8 to 10 years, the artificial turf on the football field needs to be replaced. We call in an inspector to assess the wear, and we budget this cost into the expenses about a year ahead of time, MWP ISD Assistant Superintendent Jeff Jones said. The board also recognized the Regional Spelling Bee qualifier, the MHS one-act playcast, academic UIL math team, boys powerlifting team, and girls powerlifting team, and introduced the members to the board. The board also approved the summer school schedule, which will be held on the Walker Junior High campus for K through 8 grades. The starting date is May 30th and will continue through June 16th. Classes will be held from 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. Bilingual students can stay until 2 p.m. Breakfast will be served at 7:30, with lunch served at 11:30. Parent conference day will be June 16th. Lucas Janda and Stephen Murray from Frost Bank introduced themselves to the board and offered the Frost Bank's advisory services to the school. The bank's advisors help schools with investment questions, updates on financial laws, all free of charge. In the event of another bond, the MWP ISD can get it through the Frost Bank, they said. Business manager Katie Jones told the board, "They have already been a tremendous help to me. If I email a question to them, I get a very fast response. I have never heard from the bank that backed the current bond. not once in the last several years. Frostbank is very good with her help. In another agenda item, the 2023-24 school calendar, adopted on March 23rd, has January 26, 2024, as a holiday. The day was originally set to coincide with the sale date at the Ward County Stock Show. The date for the sale day has changed to February 2nd, and the board changed the holiday date to match. Narcan is now available on all school campuses now. School nurse Ann McAllister helped acquire the drug overdose treatment. Each campus has 2 to 4 doses of Narcan available. A retirement reception will be held at the Walker Junior High cafeteria on May 24th at 4:15 p.m. Honorees are Fred Howard, MHS, Frank Bubba Disconquail, Grounds, Leslie Jones, Parkway Elementary, Baylin Finley, MHS. In closed session, the board trustees discussed the living out of district waivers for 2023-2024. Those approved were Pete Laura, Shane Lynch, John Carroll, Sarah Weaver, Josh Davila, Ashley Atrium, Geraldine Bookmiller, Isela Agundis, Elizabeth Bundick, Toy Eaton, Jasmine Franco, C.N. Hamilton, Sherry Sebastian, Lacey Clark, Lucretia Ramos, and Anthony Agundis. New hires for the 2023-2024 year were also approved. Vicki Wood, Parkway 3rd and 4th grade math and science, 10-month contract, and William Peavy, high school career and technology teacher, coach for football and golf. The board also accepted the following resignations: Edith Vandervoort, teacher, MHS, Chris Pittman, auto tech teacher, MHS, Heather Pittman, career prep teacher, MHS, Tanisha Garner, teacher, MHS, Darren Reeves, SHC, DAEP director, MHS, Lexi Madrid, paraprofessional, Parkway West, Rosanna Milam, grounds and maintenance, Jasmine Jimenez, paraprofessional East, Shane Meyer, teacher, junior high, Patricia Holder, custodian, junior high. Present at the meeting were trustees Bobby Almanza, Josh Schwab, Donna Garcia, Board President Raymond Reyes, Steve Tuxhorn, Nancy Upchurch, and Steve Fine. The next regularly scheduled meeting will be held on Monday, May 22nd at 6:30 p.m. in the MWP ISD Administration Building Boardroom, 606 South Betty Street. 4-H Volunteer Award and Operation Stone Garden Grant, Top Commissioner's Agenda. The story was written by Jan Cranville. The Ward County Commissioners met Monday morning at 9:30 a.m. in the Ward County Courthouse for a regularly scheduled meeting. A quorum was established, pledges recited, and invocation given by Ward County Judge Greg Holly. Present for the meeting were Precinct 1 Commissioner Tino Sanchez, Precinct 3 Commissioner Dexter Nichols, and Judge Greg Holly, Precinct 2 Commissioner Larry Hanna, and Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms were absent due to illness. Family Community Health Extension Agent Haley Cowley, formerly La Caz, addressed the court, quote, "The 4-H program could not exist without the help of our volunteers, and I am here to present an award to one of our volunteers. She has been nominated by our extension staff and myself to receive this award. She was selected from a variety of people in our district, which is from Andrews to El Paso. She will be recognized Wednesday, June 7th, at Texas State Roundup, as well as with a luncheon, and receive an even bigger award. But for our local community and State District 6, our Excellence Award winner goes to Jenny Thurman. This sign will be placed in her yard for all to see. End quote. Ward County Judge Greg Holly said, quote, I want to add what Haley just said. The extension program, and especially the 4-H program, don't function without a lot of volunteers, people serving and helping. Aunts, uncles, parents, grandparents, friends, all help the extension office. End quote. In regular business was the approval of the Operation Stone Garden grant for the Ward County Sheriff's Office. Operation Stone Garden is a federal grant program administered by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, a component of the Department of Homeland Security, as part of the State Homeland Security Grant Program. Operation Stone Garden provides funding to state, local, and tribal law enforcement agencies to enhance their capabilities to support joint efforts to secure the United States borders. Quote, we get the grant money to be used for several things, such as additional law enforcement personnel, overtime pay, gas, general purpose equipment, or travel and lodging. We estimated to receive around $111,000 that we will use on overtime pay and border security, Ward County Sheriff Ferran Valle said. Commissioners also gave their approval to the hospital for increase in pay for employees. Quote, we have two positions that are open and we're trying to fill. We need someone in emergency room and clinic mid-level FT at $80 per hour, and we need to fill a clinical CNA-PRN position at the Sandhills Clinic for $16.40 an hour. And right now, we have Shayla Davis as temporary transition in Med-Surg Manager PR position at the rate of $41.50 per hour, Ward Memorial Hospital Administrator CEO Leticia Rodriguez said. The commissioners voted to approve the reappointment of WMH board managers Frank Heslin, Mickey Mitchell, Jeff Burdick, and Lisa Stewart for another 2 years. In final actionable items, the court approved paying accounts payable. The next commissioners' meeting will be held on May 8th at 9:30 a.m. in the Ward County Courthouse at 401 South Allen. Individuals who would like to address the court to ask questions or inform the commissioners of problems in their precinct or Ward County can call Judge Greg Holly at 432-943-3209, discuss their question or concern, and ask to be placed on the agenda for the next commissioners' meeting. Monahan City Council moves on easement for Encore to install lines for AWOS at airport. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Once the Monahan City Council meeting got underway on Tuesday, after a slight delay due to establishing a quorum, council members met for a relatively short agenda and approved previous minutes, considered approving consent items, and a right-of-way easement for Encore. While presenting the consent items, Councilmember Calvin Carroll asked City Manager Rex Thee why there was not a code enforcement report submitted for this month. Thee answered by saying, we did not have a report submitted this meeting because our code enforcement officer has been pulling double duty and not enough change to submit a report of any value, but we should have one next time. Code Enforcement Officer Richard Covington also serves as Director of Public Works and carries a heavy workload. In other business, council members approved an easement and right-of-way for Encore Electric near the Roy Hurd Memorial Airport. Quote, this will be the right-of-way for Encore to install the underground line to power the automated weather observing system, which is expected to be installed by the end of June, City Manager Rex Thee said. The city applied for and was awarded a 75% state and 25% local grant to install the Automated Weather Observing System, AWOS, with Texas Department of Transportation in late 2019. An AWOS is a fully configured airport weather system that provides continuous real-time information and reports on airport weather conditions. Quote, "This will allow anyone flying into our airport to know the weather here. This is updated and current weather information so that pilots can make much safer landings and approaches," Thee added. The grant was for $200,000, and at a 75%, 25% match, the estimated cost of local funds needed to complete the project is around $50,000. The estimates of the project came in under the $200,000, but it is still a 75%, 25% match. The city will fund the project and request a reimbursement for the 75% of the total, Thee said. There is still the chance the grant will cover 100% of the cost, he added. The installation of the AWOS will not require the airport to be closed. In routine matters, the March accounts payable were approved by the council, totaling $827,000. The March monthly departmental reports and minutes were also approved by the City Council. The City Council meets every second and fourth Tuesday of the month at 3 p.m. Anyone wanting to address the City Council on the topics addressed in this story or any other topic may do so by asking to be added to the meeting agenda in the City Secretary's office located inside City Hall, or by appearing at the meeting during the public comment section of the meeting, which is on every agenda. Broadband project 7 years in the making, now reality. A ribbon cutting was held for Hosted America, the provider of the broadband internet service, last Thursday evening at the Chamber of Commerce during a reception honoring the many investors on the seven-year-long project. The broadband project was initiated by Teresa Burnett, the Chamber of Commerce Executive Director, in 2017. The project was started with a Federal Economic Development Administration grant and funding from philanthropic organizations and local businesses. The MEDC and Ward County also contributed to the funding. In late 2022, Monahans Economic Development selected Hosted America as the internet services provider for the new network. Quote, "People will be able to sign up for broadband to their homes and businesses by going to signup.hostedamerica.com. The hope is to get people connected to the service within 45 to 60 days," Carol Faulkner with Faulkner Consulting said. Quote, "There's about 2,300 to 2,400 homes within the community. When it's all said and done, we will have fiber to every resident, every business, and the goal is to light up this town," said Hosted America founder and CEO Philip Watkins. "They're still considering the cost, but cost is expected to be substantially less than what residents are paying now." Furman's Restaurant provided food for the event, as well as a wine tasting of wines from Four Eyes Winery.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.